Beauty Unplugged, the podcast. Welcome to this podcast episode, She Unplugged with Amy. Amy, I have known or gotten to know as, for me, one of the communication experts. That's, for me, that's Amy's middle name. And I just researched on her homepage, and let me just really making sure that I read that properly. So Amy says about herself, professional certified coach, trainer, speaker, and recovering predator. That's what she's calling herself. So I'm very much looking forward to that conversation. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Anya. Good to be with you.
So let us just start there. Predator?
Okay. Yeah, it needs a little explanation.
Yes, but it's eye-catching. I do have to say, so it's on two levels, very good in terms of the communication, because I read it and then I thought, whoop, and I read it again, and already then you capture the interest of the other person. Why are you a recovered predator?
Okay. First, I'll explain this model that comes with the term predator, and then I'll give my backstory. So my sister, Pat Kirkland, who I'll add for the details of the story, is a recovering prey. Luckily, she's the taller, older sibling. And she created this model many years ago to help people communicate more effectively. And the three archetypes are the predator, the prey, and the partner. Most of the time, most of us are behaving as partners. Like right now, you and I, we're holding high respect for the other and for ourselves simultaneously, all is well. And this is where we have the most ability to positively influence others. The problem is, under pressure, stress, perceived threat, crisis, COVID, or just if we're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired, we could slip into one of those two extremes. The predator would sound like this, Anya, but what part of my explanation do you not understand? You can hear idiot after.
And I turn straight into the prey.
Interesting, yeah. And so I've damaged the relationship. Mm-hmm. You've either feel intimidated or ticked off or both. Either way, it's not good news. The other extreme, the prey, and that's spelled P-R-E-Y, although they're often P-R-A-Y-ing because they're usually really nice people. And they tend to hold too much respect for the other and not enough for themselves. Right. And here's what's significant about that. When we show too much respect for the others and not enough for ourselves, that can actually trigger another person, a seemingly lovely person, to become a predator towards them. So another way to say it is, for listeners, is if you're in any relationship where you feel like you're getting mistreated, it's possible you're being too nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is shown, and my sister did a great job developing it, and she identifies very specifically the body language, the voice, and the words that make us sound either too much predator or too much prey. So the idea is, step in partner before you need it. Stay in partner when the going gets tough. And remain in partner even if you don't get what you want, because at any one of those stages, magic can happen. Plus, if we're disciplining ourselves consistently to stay partner and override that instinctive desire to be predator or prey, because it happens to us so rapidly and so even before we have a conscious moment to catch it at, you know, in the beginning, then when we're forcing ourselves to stay partner, we're creating new pathways in the brain. Mm-hmm. And that means we're more likely to be able to stay partner in the future. She studied this for many years in many different disciplines. One of those disciplines was improvisational theater. Now, for listeners who don't know what improvisational theater is, imagine you go to a performance and you see a group of actors on stage who have no script, no preparation, no props, and out of seemingly thin air, they create dances and songs and scenes. And it looks like friggin' magic. Except behind the scenes, what's happening is their rehearsal is they're not rehearsing lines or staging. They're rehearsing muscles, interior muscles, to help them make each other look good, to flex greater collaboration, to put their ego to the side, to be willing to embrace failure and take risks. And as a result, they're able to then come together and this seemingly magical thing happens on stage. And so Pat studied the high status, low status of improvisational theater and said, okay, so that high status, that when it's taken to the extreme, that becomes a predator. The low status taken to the extreme becomes the prey. So that was one of the models that she studied. She also studied, believe it or not, dog training. Because, so there's one specific voice technique that we teach that is really challenging for people to capture at first. We call it the downward inflection. So the opposite is the upward inflection. So right now, if I talk to you with an upward inflection, every time I pause, my voice goes up like I'm not sure of myself. My name is Amy. I don't know, is it? Mm-hmm. And so here's a quick story about the inflection. I was in Zurich a few years ago. I was just about to start a 2-hour workshop. A woman runs in, she's carrying her little fluffy dog. And she said, I didn't have time to go home. Can I take the dog into the workshop? I said, sure. And that's one of the things that improv has taught me is always say yes, not to the detriment of myself, though, to the detriment of my ego, let's say. And she puts the dog down. I start the workshop. I do the introduction of the predator and very aggressive, like I demonstrated with you. And then I do the demo of the prey, which I forgot to do with you. So it would sound like something like this. Hi, my name is Amy Carroll. I'm so happy to be here. And within three sentences, Anya, that dog looked at me and said, rawr, rawr. It started growling. That's how intuitive the behaviors are.
Because you showed the prey part, the dog went into the predator straight away.
He heard probably the tone in my voice.
Yeah.
Because the upward inflection, I'm wanting to let you know you're safe with me. I'm not a threat. The problem is I'm overdoing it and I'm actually triggering this predator reaction in others.
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Yeah. And it's important. People will sometimes, a participant in my workshop might say, suddenly, it's my fault. No. This is a societal thing. You've learned this is cultural. Sometimes women more than men do it, though I come across a lot of men who do the upward inflection. So I would encourage listeners to turn that around to say, rather than holding yourself responsible, realize, holy smokes, are you telling me if I master the downward inflection, I'm going to command greater respect? Yes, I am.
Okay, what would that sound like? Give us an example.
Good morning. My name is Amy Carroll. I'm a coach and trainer. Mm-hmm. I love chocolate.
So you're making sure at the end of the sentence, you're really going down.
That last syllable.
The period in.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, if people want to check out, I finally wrote a newsletter and did some videos on it. I think it's newsletter number 42 on my category on my website. So because it's really, at first it's completely invisible. And when I coach people on it, they think I'm hallucinating, except I'm really coaching them for everyone else in the room. Cause they're like, oh no, I hear it. Oh, I get it. And then after there's a tipping point and people can start to hear it for themselves, which is exciting.
So now when people come to the training to you, are they already aware of their own pattern or do you need to, I see.
I try not to be shocked anymore, Anya. So I explain the model and then I often talk to people and I'm talking one-on-one and clearly they are showing up as a predator. And so I explain the model and I'm, very gently say, so do you think you tend to be more predator or more prey? Oh, I'm totally prey. Really? And here's another thing. Thanks for letting me add this. Many people can flip-flop. So under pressure, like for me, and I'll go back, I'll have to answer this still, the question about why I am a recovering predator. That would be my default almost every time. Other people, sometimes they're predator, let's say at home, and sometimes they're prey, perhaps at work. Yeah. That's a common pattern.
Now, let me ask you that. I just had a conversation a week ago with somebody. And the description of the conversation at her work was clearly the other one was the predator.
Yeah.
But perceived her also as the predator.
Yeah.
Now, in transactional analysis, we have that lovely yes. triangle.
Yes.
Drama triangle. And I used that to show to her, well, look, you're just going from predator to prey to predator to prey.
Yep.
Suddenly the manager becomes the rescuer.
Yep.
How do we get out of that predator prey into partner?
Okay, hold that question for a minute because you just made me realize I should explain something else. So the thing I want you to be aware of is, so, and if for people who are listening and they don't see my hand gestures, just imagine a line, a continuum with predator at one extreme and prey at the other extreme. And everything else in the middle is partner. And if someone who is naturally more high likable, that's the blend of competence and likability, that's what makes partner. And they're extremely high likable, they're leaning towards the prey side. If there's conflict, they're going to go more prey because that's their default. That's what they know. It's their strategy. And we're doing this unconsciously. And then that's probably triggering things to get worse. So they go more prey and more prey and more prey. Now they're at the extreme end of prey, except because they have value and self-worth, they are so frustrated with getting mistreated by the other because their prey is probably triggering the other one to be more predator. They go, boom, and they catapult from the extreme prey to the extreme predator. We call this popping, the pissed off prey. So it's not authentically predator. So they may truly feel like prey inside because maybe when they were a kid, because of a sibling or being bullied by someone at school, maybe they truly were prey younger when they were younger and they haven't updated their thinking process. And now they're actually showing up as predator or they're popping and exploding as predator because basta, enough is enough. So that's one thing I wanted to explain to help people. Again, I don't think people should waste time. I say it and it sounds so easy. Do your best to not waste time beating yourself up. Yeah. Feeling guilty. I heard this. I listened to multiple podcasts, great interviews with Maxine and Geraldine and Betty Ann and Helen, and you know, hearing consistently the importance of being kind and gentle with ourselves. I think a lot of listeners are like, well, if I'm kind and gentle with myself, nothing will ever get done. No, it can. Yeah, I think we agree with that. So let's see, where was I? Have you ask your question now? Let's see if I can.
So the question is, how do we manage mm-hmm. to train ourselves or to force ourselves, because it is a conscious decision, out of that game, predator-prey,
yeah.
into partner?
Okay. It has to become a conscious decision mm-hmm. because right now it's completely below the surface. And you know, you asked me earlier when participants come into my workshops, are they clueless? Sometimes yes. Though I've gotten very clever, and I'm going to plug my book here for a minute, though there is a good reason for it. A few years ago, I used to give my book as a gift after a workshop. Now I give it as required pre-reading before a workshop. Oh my God, Anya, they walk into the classroom now with these big smiles on their face or onto Zoom and they're smiling like, oh, I get it. And I use that thing with the frame game and the pretend not to notice. And so their awareness just from reading the 90-minute book raises enormously and it makes them way more coachable. So it makes my job easier and then we can go further as a result. And then sometimes there's people who are still in the dark about, no, I'm partner all the time. Really? First step is awareness. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so powerful for people when they read the book or they take the class. And sometimes it's excruciating for people because they're horrified. Like, here's a short story. I did a way back when we used to do face-to-face trainings.
Back in the days?
Yeah, back in the days. It was Christmas time, 2018. And I was up in Denmark delivering a 2-day intensive. The guy leaves my training all hunched over and depressed. And he walks out. He's like, thanks. And I'm horrified because I think, oh no, because he realized that he had been prey so much of his life that was what was the trigger for all of his mistreatment. And I was really concerned, like, wow, okay, that goal didn't, I didn't achieve my goal to help him move to the other side. Well, Anya, a week later, I get an email from the guy. He says, I want to let you know what happens 6 hours after your training. I thought the training ended at 5:30 at night. What would you do for 6 hours? He explained not one, not two, not three different scenarios where he applied the skills. He said, I went to an impromptu job interview after the training. The guy hadn't even read my CV. He said, except I showed up with that energy that you talked about and that downward inflection thing and the smile. And the guy said, as soon as the headcount freeze is lifted, I want to work with you. He said, Amy, I was so delighted that when I went into Copenhagen to have dinner with my wife, I just, you know, I was buzzing with energy. So I had, again, I had a warm smile, great energy. And he said, I got to let you know that there's been all sorts of predator-prey dynamics in my relationship with my wife for a long time, which is very, unfortunately, common. Not just for this guy, for many people. And he said, because of the great mood that the interview left me with, I showed up with that great energy. He said, at the end of the evening, he said, I was heading to the airport. At the end of the evening, she gave me a hug and a kiss goodbye, and it was like falling in love again. I thought, okay, marital therapy, write that down.
Yes.
And then he says, I get to the airport. It's 10 o'clock at night. I'm flying back to Hong Kong where my boys are. And I had, because it's Christmas time, I had 10 kilos extra overweight in my suitcase. So when I checked in, the flight attendant said to me, sir, you're 10 kilos overweight. And he said he was, you know, she said it like in a really icy, nasty way. So I leaned over the counter, and with that downward inflection thing you taught us and a warm smile, I asked, can I pay that with my American Express card? So notice he wasn't trying to get out of it. He wasn't trying to charm her or manipulate or beg. He just accepted. And this is one of the tools I talk about, the partner mindset, is detach yourself from the outcome. So he wanted a specific outcome. He let go of it. He used the skills. He said she did the rest of the check-in in total silence. And at the end, she leaned over the counter. She said, if you hurry, I won't have a chance to catch you.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is that you're saying during the training, what the first thing is the awareness.
Right.
So listen to ourselves. Trying to get a feeling how we work in relationship. And I also heard you saying, you know, it can be very different. It can be different with different people.
Yes.
We are triggered by different people. Maybe the tip of the nose reminds us of somebody and we go straight into one or the other.
Yep.
So the awareness is the first thing. And then what I heard you saying several times now is like to have a certain energy. A big smile, so something I send, something positive?
Sometimes. So when I go through the training, I list all of the potential behaviors that could trigger someone to sound too much like a predator, mm-hmm. whether it's the words they're using or their tone or the look on their face or that eyebrow that's like, are you an idiot? Mm-hmm. And then the other list of extreme behaviors of prey, of what could make you sound submissive or uncertain, even if that's not how you're feeling inside. And sometimes I find predators who do prey behavior. So when they get a predator reaction from someone, they go instantly predator. So essentially we just look at these list of 10, 12, let's see, there's probably 10 behaviors on each list. We look at them and say, okay, these are the behaviors generally you want to stay away from these. Interestingly, there's a couple of behaviors that overlap, like speed of speech and the raised eyebrows could either make you sound too predator or too prey. Mm-hmm. So I'll demonstrate so the listeners can get a sense. Anya, could you just, I didn't understand. Could you explain? Mm-hmm. Or this one. Anya, can you just explain it to me? I'm sorry, just explain it, will you? So roughly the words stay the same, except one sounding aggressive and tense, the second one, and the first one sounding pleading and begging and apologetic. So I invite people, okay, these are the behaviors you want to get rid of, and this is what you replace them with. And then the replacement is, for the predator behaviors, it's a list of high competence behaviors. And for the prey, it's a list of high likable behaviors. Because whenever we're meeting another human being, they want to know two things. Can she do the job? perceived competence? Will I enjoy working with her? Perceived likability.
I'm not asking what I am.
Well, it's funny. I know I make people really paranoid. They're like, oh my God, what is she doing? Anya, I got to tell you, girl, you're good. You're good. The smile, the energy, the smile and the energy are two really strong qualities of partner. You're solid.
I do know for myself, I can be very much a predator. When sure. I'm under pressure,
yep.
things need to get done.
Yep.
And I have the impression that the partner is just somehow on holiday. I go into the predator. I do know that. And I do tell my team, I am honest. I said, under pressure, I can crack in my communication skills and I get very short sentences.
Yes.
I lose all the polite, good morning, how are you part?
Right.
Bang, bang, bang. And I have done that in the team meeting. I said, women, tell me, this is how I talk. Can you take it? Do I have to change something? So the self-awareness is, I find, at the center, because, well, we can try to learn all these things, but as much as we do that under really, really high stress, when you read any kind of studies,
right,
always fall back into our...
There is truth to that. So Anya, I'm going to ask you, if you want me to coach you through that sort of scenario and be the guinea pig, I'm happy to. We'll have plenty of other things to talk about. So that's an option. The second thing I want to tell you about, which might be useful for you, is because I am that recovering predator. You were asking about that. And here's the short story. The backstory of that is I've been picking fights since the age of 6. I am what I would label a protective predator. Meaning if someone's going to be disrespectful, my perception of disrespectful to me or to someone else, then I will go predator in an instant. This is, the former Amy. So I would have no problem. I have picked fights on city streets with people who were disrespectful. I have picked fights. I've had an attitude with police officers. And I'm not recommending any of this. Yes. In fact, in the book, I talk about, luckily, how I managed to stay partner with a police officer with a situation I absolutely deserved to get that ticket. And somehow, some miracle, I did not. So first I had to become aware, I'm the common denominator. I'm the problem in all these relationships because I'm going predator. And it's okay. And it feels like a high value for me that I protect myself and others. Though the twist is now it's time to upgrade. And it took me 15 years, Anya, from the time I realized I had a problem to the point at which I got the level of mastery. And people are really disappointed when they hear like 15 years, Amy. I don't have 15 years.
Oh, yes, you do.
And I say, here's great news. What took me 15 years, people can do in a fraction of the time because of this user-friendly model. So first it's awareness. Then the second thing is find the motivation. And the thing is, when we're in a position senior to others, there's that power dynamic going on that we have to acknowledge. So we will slip into predator more likely than we would with a client, for example.
Yes.
Isn't that suspicious? How is it that I'm suddenly able to control myself when it comes to, when the dynamic is I'm down here and they're up here, or with a police officer, those situations. So that tells me that we can control it, even though it doesn't feel easy or possible in the moment. And so when I'm working with people, I'm working from outside in and inside out. So outside in is the body language, the voice and words, how to look and sound like a partner under pressure. And then inside out is, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? What are you telling yourself that's helping you to stay partner or pulling you out? And that's what I talk about in the book.
I'm a mom of two teenage daughters.
Oh, bless you.
Thank you. So we are humans. We are humans, and it is about being kind to ourselves and not hitting ourselves over the head when we then flip again and when we lose.
Because you will. Yeah,
we will. I think that is somehow what I tell in the coaching setup, the clients. If you think that just because you're aware of something and you have the motivation and the why is strong and all that is in place, you will never make that same mistake again or show that same behavior again. Forget it.
Right.
I think that is that being kind to ourselves. I want to put that at the center.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. And with that, a couple of thoughts. One is I bring a lot of play into my coaching and into my life because I'll back up and tell you that when I started my business 20 something years ago, I did one of those values assessments. And Anya, my top two values were fun and play. I was horrified. I thought, all I want to do is have fun and play, I'll never make any money. Luckily, I found a way to do both. So that's a way to bring kindness and gentleness in is the lightness and the gentleness through humor and laughter. And I have a great friend who, my friend Paula in Manhattan, whenever I call her up, you know, she always makes me laugh. And even if I'm feeling my ego's been triggered, I'm pissed off about something, we can lighten it up with the humor and that helps me to shift. Now, the other thing I wanted to say was when we make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So at the end of a 2-day training, I announced to everyone, okay, now here's what's going to happen. Maybe tomorrow at the office, maybe tonight at home, you will go home and you will fail miserably. And they're like, what do you, you know, Amy, is this your pep talk? And I said, it's going to happen. So don't assume it won't. Assume it will. And when it does, as soon as you can, be kind and gentle. Then once you've found a little bit of space, maybe it's an hour after the change, maybe it's a day, maybe it's a week, as soon as possible, you want to analyze the situation through the lens of partner. Mm-hmm. Even though you might not be able to go back and repair or fix that situation, the benefit is when we use visualization to analyze an ideal outcome, we're creating new pathways in the brain. So what I'm inviting people to do is use their failure as a way to build stronger partner muscles.
When you're describing that, what it just reminds me, there's a curve in the psychology of learning. It's a model, and it actually shows when you are starting to be aware and you want to change the behavior, there's always that step back and forward. And that's part of that learning curve.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's actually part of the process.
Yes.
It's like suddenly you notice you showing that behavior. Before you weren't aware, so that's the benefit. But the behavior is still there. Now you need to somehow make it possible to have a gap between a situation and action and your reaction.
Yes.
In that gap, say, okay, what did I learn with Amy? Oh, I see that. Okay. I behave like that.
Yeah.
That's the learning, to have that gap widened.
Yeah. Here's something for listeners, a little nugget that I learned recently. It's called sipping the soup.
Sipping the soup.
Okay. So something, let's say we're in a team meeting and let's say you're my boss and you've just snapped at me. And whatever you've accused me of or told me, I've done it. I'm wrong. I'm guilty. And of course, what's likely to happen is maybe I have this instant reaction of feeling defensive or angry, or maybe it's not justified. Maybe you're unfairly accusing me of something and we're in a team meeting. So, and maybe I feel like, you know, I'm either about to cry or about to say something sarcastic or defensive or throw somebody, you know, one of my colleagues under the bus. Many options here. Instead, sip the soup. So what they say is you take let's say you pretend you have you've got a pen or something and you, this is again, once again, when we're back in the office, so you could do this in virtually, you pretend to drop your pen, or you drop the pen. And as you're going down to pick it up, quickly inhale and then slowly exhale. You know, obviously I'm doing this to make the noise mm-hmm. so people can hear it. Though you do it without, you don't make it obvious. What you're triggering is the vagal nerve in the back of the bottom of your spine to the top of your head, the largest nerve in the body, which shifts you into, can help you go from a sympathetic to a parasympathetic state. And this will immediately start to calm the body. So I encourage people to practice doing the sipping the soup in low stress moments so they'll remember it. So you're creating a certain pathway to create a memory or a habit rather. So they'll have that available to them. And I think that would speak directly to what you're talking about, is to widen that gap from action to response.
You actually create some time.
That's it. Yeah, that's it.
It's kind of hitting the pause button.
Without it being obvious.
Yeah.
You know, your team thinks, oh, she just dropped a pen.
Yeah. And the exhale is actually, I mean, when you do any kind of relaxation exercises, on any kind of therapy, and I've tried a few, the exhale is always the one that relaxes you. So
okay.
The exhale always has to be longer
okay.
than the inhale.
Okay, so that is right. So it's a quick inhale as you're picking up the pen, and then as you're coming back up, slow exhale. Thank you.
Something I learned in being a mom is like getting out of the situation, physically removing myself
yes.
from that situation. In a team meeting, that could be we're all sitting around the table. And as soon as I do that, I get out of the situation.
Yep. Yeah. So
that is on various levels a very clever way.
Yeah. You know, Anya, something you were saying when you're talking about your teenage girls made me think of something. And I really want to emphasize this for listeners. A lot of times people assume, if that's a word, inaccurately assume that being partner means you can't get angry or mad or frustrated or push back. And that's exactly the opposite of what I do. I teach people, I show people, I coach people how they can set strong boundaries, deliver bad news in a way that they still maintain respect for themselves and for the other. Because there are times in life when things are mission critical that you've got to push back. So I think it's really important that people understand it's not that you're always having to say yes to everything and always being sweet and polite. And people think, well, Amy, are you telling me I can't be angry? What I'm suggesting is the packaging. So let's say, Anya, you and I are colleagues and we butt heads occasionally and there's conflict. So let's say we've just had one of those moments. And so rather than me showing up as a predator, Anya, if you interrupt me one more time, you're like going, oh, okay. All right. So instead I could say something like this, and I would probably have to take a break more than just, bending down to get my pen back up. And again, it might be an hour later. Maybe I come back to you a day later, a week later, even. I encourage people to go away, reflect what you want to say, make sure the packaging is partner and you're able to deliver it as a partner. Make sure you've been recently fed and watered. Right?
Yeah.
I had a participant tell me once, Amy, I just discovered that either she heard this recommendation, she applies it. I never have any important conversations before dinner with my husband. Yeah. She said conflict has reduced significantly.
That's good.
Right?
Now, tell me how you would say that.
Okay, good.
Interrupt.
Right. So I'm at my wit's end, except I've gone away for a couple of days. I've thought about it. And I'll say, hey, Anya, do you have some time later today or tomorrow to talk? There's something on my mind. So I'm ideally, in the perfect world, I'm not even going to surprise you right now with it. I'll just, either send you an email or write you a text or ask you. Would you have some time later? I wanted to talk about last Thursday's team meeting.
Yeah, sure. I do.
Okay, great. Okay, fast forward the day we, set the time. And hey, Anya, thanks for taking the time. And so as I'm doing this, listeners, notice how I'm going to have even though I'm delivering what I consider bad news, I'm going to have a slightly upbeat energy. I'm going to go really slow. So I call this, this is the delicate conversation speed, 4 times slower. So Anya, you go ahead and play that colleague that we don't get along great. And so you're not excited about this conversation. You probably know what's coming. And I've lost my cool before. So you can embody that person and I'm going to stay in character with this. So Anya, I wanted to talk about Thursday's team meeting, because I noticed I got really frustrated. You and I have talked in the past about that we wouldn't interrupt each other or cut the other one off or, you know, explain the project idea until the other one, in this case, I wanted to explain it and you jumped in. I am guessing you were probably enthusiastic about it, though you went and you took the whole idea and explained it to our boss, and I was so frustrated. So that's what I wanted to tell you.
Or start again, you go away and you think about it.
Yes.
And all, I always tell people in teams also, make sure you actually have some communication rules in place in the team, because you in your feedback to me refer to that we had agreed on some rules. And right. I find that really important that teams are clear on the values they share and how those values show up in their behavior. If it's now in a conflict or in a communication, whatever, and they build basically some behavior rules that they say, okay,
for brilliant. Example,
we don't interrupt each other.
Yeah.
Or if we mess up, we come and try to have an open conversation about it.
Right.
This is what I'm getting.
Yeah. So let's leave this role play and rewind, you know, 3 months before when we had that conversation. You're right. I would say, hey, you know, I'm noticing sometimes when we're in meetings together, we're speaking over each other. Because it would be important for me to take responsibility if I thought I was doing that as well. You know, I'm feeling from frustration because I really want to be able to show the value that I'm providing, and I want the boss to hear that. Mm-hmm. And so this will take time for me to have figured this all out. So now, and this is coming from nonviolent communication, you're probably guessing. And then that fourth step is, so Anya, here's my question. Would you be willing to resist the temptation to interrupt me or speak at the same time as me until I've expressed my idea, maybe check in with me? And then you would say, most likely reasonable, yes. I'd say, okay, great. And then I don't finish it there. There I say, okay, great. I really appreciate that. And Anya, in case you accidentally do it again, is it okay if I check in with you?
Yeah.
All right. So that last sentence, I call that the safety net, because that speaks to what we talked about earlier. Human beings are human beings. And we make mistakes and we screw up, and it's a back, forth, back, forth, back, forth. So even though I know that, I still get to be frustrated, except I go back, I reflect, I think about what I want to say to you. And then also, did you notice how slowly I went in the role play and how there's a little bit of lightness in my voice? And then there was a little bit of playfulness when I was like, I was so frustrated. So I'm guessing you didn't feel defensive or aggressive.
I couldn't stay. I mean, I really thought, well, how could I play that in a way that it would be real? The only argument that came to my mind then is, God, Amy, you talk so slow. You know, when we are describing a project and I'm excited, you're going at the speed of a snail. I just sort of like woof, and that was the only argument that went through my head.
Okay, great. So let's say you say that. So my job is to listen, go, mm-hmm. Anya, you're right. I have been accused of that by more than one person. In fact, I know I also give too much detail.
Yeah.
All right. So now if I was, because I've gone slow, and my job is to not show I'm getting defensive. Even if I feel defensive inside, my job is to shut my mouth and listen when it's your turn, the smiling, the nodding. And if there's truth to that, to be able to name it, acknowledge it, agree with you if there's truth to that, because boy, that vulnerability, as scary as it might feel, is huge for bonding us and showing transparency and honesty. And then I add one more piece of dirty laundry. I give too much detail. Mm-hmm. You know, if I knew any of that about me, the irony is that we would probably feel much more bonded and closer with each other after this exchange.
Absolutely. We all have different ways of talking, you know, and it's not right or wrong. It's just different.
And here's the thing, Anya. So you just did something very partner. You were talking, I started to talk over you and you let me interrupt. So that's one of the skills I teach people. Two things: let yourself be interrupted and avoid interrupting others. So I broke my cardinal rule. Lucky for me, you're being partner. And the irony is this conversation, by me being more transparent and showing vulnerability and admitting, this is now maybe just the middle of the conversation. Because then maybe I'd say, well, Anya, if you want to and you have time right now, let's brainstorm ways we can work around that, or a strategy when you're feeling frustrated. You know, and then I'm showing generosity and willingness and
Yeah. Now, let me ask you that, Amy. Times are difficult.
Yeah.
I've heard cases where, because of being home office, the employee was at home, the boss was at home, but she didn't just have home office. Her husband had home office. The kids were homeschooling. Kid was around. The manager, so the boss, got first time very predator in a way of, can you make sure that we have more quiet next time when we talk? And she was like, I've got a small flat. So went all prey very much in that direction. How can we, under these circumstances, where we're not sitting together for a cup of coffee every day, where we're not getting that sense of the other, we've got a screen for people to notice. I look at Amy. No, I'm not. I'm looking at the camera. If I look at Amy, I need to look there. So the entire conversation, I get a shadow. I don't really get Amy's facial expression because politely I look at the camera.
Yeah.
How can we overcome that?
Well, it's interesting. I've been analyzing that a lot because I'm teaching a lot of online courses with how to for people to show up with leadership presence and gravitas and running meetings and dealing with conflict and such. And like right now I'm looking to the side of my computer. Does it look like I'm looking right at the computer?
I can't say because I'm looking at the camera.
Okay.
I look at you.
So does it look like I'm looking straight at the camera?
Well, you're not looking at me.
Okay. So now?
Yes.
Good.
Now you would be looking at me.
Okay, good. So this is me looking right at the camera. So it's the same situation you talked about. Luckily, my screens are not that much apart. Mm-hmm. I think, so now I'm going to look down. I think that people understand that we're looking at different parts. And as long as the face is within close proximity to the screen, that people have some leeway. At the same time, if I want to give a really, if I have an important message or a really delicate message, I might shift up here. So I'm looking, I know I'm looking right at the camera. And then I might flip back down to you to make sure, you know, see how you reacted to that. So you're right. It's not ideal and we're still learning how to handle that. So let's go back to the situation. So the boss went predator, the employee went prey. The boss is a male, the woman's a female, and he's attacking, because that would be my description.
Yeah.
Her
being unprofessional.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what's your question behind this? Because I could say a couple different things.
My question behind it is, how can we, under these circumstances, we're at home, we're under stress, kids running around, kids are annoyed, partner is annoyed, we are annoyed, boss is annoyed. How can we remain partner? And especially, I come back to what you said earlier, Amy, not be walked all over. I want to be a respectful partner to my manager, and still tell him, no, that's not okay the way you're treating me right now.
Yeah, okay. So there's two ways to approach this. One is, I'm going to make some assumptions about that scenario, which we don't know if it's true or not. I believe she's been showing up as prey with him. And so he knew he could unconsciously just go on the attack like that without a second guess. If that was his colleague, if that was his boss, would he do that? Okay, so there's that speaks to the positional power that I talked about earlier. And so like for me as a business owner, I got to check my ego. I don't get to miss, even though I still slip sometimes, I don't get to misbehave because I'm the customer or because I'm the boss. And my job is to keep pushing myself so I can stay partner no matter what the situation is, not just because someone has power over me. So my first job in this, if I was coaching this woman, the first thing I would do is get her to start showing up as a partner to her boss. And that would be, how is she sitting? How is she speaking? Is she over apologizing? So one of the newsletters on my website, I think it's number 7, about not over apologizing. Because prey tend to do that. We do it more with someone who's in a higher hierarchical position. So I'd get her to replace sorry with thank you. Thanks for understanding. Thanks for your patience. Thanks for the explanation. It's bizarre and it works. The next thing I would do is probably have her speak louder and slower. I'd make sure she was doing a downward inflection. I'd make sure she's not doing any noises between her words. A lot of people say, oh, Amy, I'm speaking English as a second language, so that's why I do that. Nope. I say, okay, you know, say it to me in Turkish or say it to me in Italian or say it to me in Lithuanian. And sure enough, those little filler sounds are there. Yeah. So what it is discomfort with silence. So I tell them practice doing the downward inflection because that will get you to feel more comfortable. It calms the brain down a little bit. So your job is to pretend to be comfortable with silence. So I would have her work on all of those behaviors to project herself with greater gravitas and confidence. And it's going to be scary to do that with the senior person. And I also warn people, I say, if you've been in a predator-prey dynamic where someone's been a predator and you've been the prey, now you're going to raise your partner behaviors, warning, because the predator is not going to like it, and they're going to potentially get more predator in the hopes of getting you to go back down to prey. So you might not want to use these skills until you've got a certain level of mastery over them. Not perfection, not 100% of the time, just getting more comfortable with them. So sometimes I encourage people to practice with complete strangers or with situations where they're the customer because they get more stuff.
Yeah.
So they're working on the skill set. They're prepared for the predator to misbehave. They're holding steady. And sometimes it works faster than people expect. I had a Dutch woman. She was about 25. She said, Amy, every time I go into the file room and I ask this one woman, Sandra, for this document, she always goes predator on me. I said, okay, so next time you have to go there, I want you to do it with a smile. Now I said, warning, because you and Sandra already have a relationship, it's going to take 3 to 5 times at a minimum, probably before she changes. She sends me an email. She says, you're not going to believe it. The next day I went into the file room and I said, hey, Sandra. So she went with upbeat energy, warm smile. Hey, Sandra, can I have the file, blah, blah, blah. She said, Amy, she was a total partner with me. She said, I left the room and I had to stand against the wall. How did that happen? So that was one time and it worked.
I know from some video presentation work, there the coach told me, usually you should stand, you know, if you're standing in a meeting. I mean, yes. Even now on Zoom, you know, I mean, my husband has one of those nice desks that, you know, nice. He can raise up. So he's standing. I couldn't be standing. It's physically challenging. But she said, sit at the front of the chair.
I would add slightly because I actually teach the opposite. So if you, for me, people who sit too far up on their chair are communicating prey. I'm working too hard. I'm pleasing. I'm the puppy dog. So instead I would do a hybrid of what she says, sit back in your chair. So I say to people, I want to make sure your back is touching. So you're not slouching though, right? So your back is touching and then you just adjust the camera so that, you know, that you can see like to the torso ideally. And then you're gesturing, and that's another thing that helps people look and sound confident, sure of themselves. So that's what I generally encourage people to do. Today I'm, you know, speaking with you with my microphone here, so I'm, you know, snuggling up to the front.
Oh, that's such a nice word. I'm snuggling up.
Yes.
Now, Amy, how can people get the book that's on the shelf behind you?
Amazon, actually. I think that's probably the easiest way. Yeah. And the title is called The Ego Tango, and it's the partner mindset techniques to complement the predator-prey partner model.
If they can't attend a training with you, the book helps them already?
Yeah. Yeah. And that was legitimate upward inflection because, and actually you really still went down. Helps them already? No, you did go up. It was a question. So that's legitimate.
Yes. That's what I learned by question too.
Right.
Now, let me ask you that sort of to round up our conversation. Why are you so curious about communication? What is it that got you hooked on that topic?
My sister and I both, we come from opposite directions and we're both incredibly passionate about the evolution of human communication. Here's the thing, Anya. I'm convinced that when we step out of the predator-prey dynamic, which is the old way of thinking, Einstein said we can't solve the problems we face the same level of thinking we were at when we created them. I think we created a lot of our problems globally in a predator-prey dynamic. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced, I'm getting chills as I'm saying this to you, if we can stay in partner under pressure with challenging situations, we can eliminate a lot of the problems that we've created. I've heard multiple times podcasts where people talk about countries that have gone to war with each other. And I've literally heard them say, if they had just apologized. Yes. I thought, are you kidding me? That's it. That's what you're, and it's true. And that's like the little role play you and I did. I acknowledged to you, yeah, you're right. Sometimes I'm slow. And sometimes I give too much detail. That's sort of a version of an apology to you. So it's understandable that you would feel a sense of calming and peace. So the passion for me is really literally bringing more kindness and harmony to the world we live in.
That gives me even mean chills. It pushes a button where years and years and years ago when I did the Harvard concept in negotiation, when we were taught about how it was found and the whole concept of cooperation when it comes to negotiation, we are partners. We are not on opposite ends of the table. We are sitting side by side. And when we are partners and we're understanding why I'm doing something, I understand why you're so much into the details, why you put so much emphasis on there, what your interest is behind it.
Yeah.
I have an understanding and an appreciation for that quality and I don't fight it because I know why you're doing it and what it brings to the table.
Yeah.
Amy, at the end of my podcast,
yes,
I love to ask the question, was there a question you would have liked me to ask that I didn't? Or is there something you would like to underline now because you find it most important?
Oh, that is such a lovely question for all those people who have too much to say. Yes. Yeah, definitely. What's popping up in my mind is the passion I have for improvisational theater. Because there's the philosophy of improv is a group of actors who get on stage and they do a perfect performance, the audience loves them, except they didn't enjoy working together, that's considered a failure. Mm-hmm. A group of actors who get on stage, they have a fantastic time together, though the audience like, yeah, whatever, that is considered a success. Because if people enjoy working together, they're going to want to keep working together. And if they're going to keep working together, there's a greater chance that success will come in the future. And I have so much joy from my two improv troupes that I'm with. If there's a sense of inclusion and this philosophy of I've got your back. And for me, I guess what I would encourage listeners to do is, as scary as it is sometimes, is consider taking an improv course. Not just one class, not just, get your feet wet if you want to, though. If you do something over a period of time, you'll start to see how your attitude, that I call it the improv attitude, when you make your partner look good, You apply that to all areas of your life, whether it's the Uber driver or the person you're married to for 10 years, it makes a difference.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that you say that make your partner look good. That's really a rule in improv. I just heard that yesterday somewhere.
Really?
Yeah. If we could apply that, like you said, in our work, in our private life, there's a different energy. And that's, I think, what you describe as the partner energy.
Yes.
I want to make you look good, not because I don't feel, no, I want to, I have that eye to eye.
Yeah, because we're going to have more fun together. If you're looking good, you're going to want to make me look good, and we're all going to be looking good together.
Amy, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for all the wisdom you brought to the podcast.
It's been so fun, Anya.
I encourage the people to get your book, to follow you on your social media channels, which I always put at the bottom of the podcast. Hook up with Amy, see what she's up to. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Anya. Have a great day to the listeners.
You heard a production by Anya Förster. Copyright Anya Förster. Music by audionautics.com.